theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
Good day, my wonderful friends. Hello, Quinn. How are you feeling today?
Great. How are you, my love?
I'm all right, thank you. I am kind of in this, you know, visionary world right now where I'm digging deep into the question of what is art?
Oh, yeah.
And art is within, you know, beauty in art is within the eye of the beholder. I don't know if that's actually the right term, but
it sounds right. Yeah,
it's all about how you perceive it, and it's very qualitative. It's not quantitative. The only thing that is kind of quantitative about it is you can factor in the quantity of that art piece.
How rare it is.
Yeah, but and you can correlate and try to figure out what relationship that has with the current demand. And that can kind of make it in value have different numbers. But at the same time, I think in general we can say art is fully perceived by what you see it as being.
It's subjective, for sure.
Very.
And the value of a piece of art, even if it's one of one, is subjective too. It's mm-hmm. based on all of us agreeing, like, yeah, that person's a really great artist, and what they made is worth that much money. You know, because, I mean, how many artists have painted on a canvas
mm-hmm.
one time, like right. one piece? There's a lot of one of ones out there, mm-hmm. but not everything is worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So when we were talking about like the valuation of an art piece and whatnot, I mean, I don't think that, you know, it's very subjective. So it's hard to really put a price on, you know, what someone loves, what someone mm-hmm. doesn't like. Someone yeah. like something could be worth millions of dollars and right. people think that it's awful, you yeah. know, and that's okay. I mean, it is what it is. I think obviously like provenance or history, heritage, like how long it's been around, like mm-hmm. how you know, like Picasso, you know, back in the day.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
more modern art, I think people have a hard time with mm-hmm. a little bit more so than not. But man, we're entering a whole new realm with what art could potentially be in the future.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really, I know we've really gotten down this rabbit hole of like existentially, what is art?
Yeah. Well, I think that one thing that we're going to try to do is we're not going to try to define what is art for everyone or what makes a piece more valuable than others.
Yeah.
I think the key is for us to just have a simple discussion on what we view as true art, or like the kind of art pieces that maybe talk to us and why they talk to us. So the first artist, which artist is such like a broad term, but I appreciate that it is, that I'd actually like to bring up, and it's more of a question, is the architect who you love and adore.
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright. He is an amazing artist. We agree. He, right.
Very creative. Artist, yeah, right. I would say so. For
and
sure.
he is, there's a lot of reasons why we love and appreciate his art. We got the opportunity to stay in one of his, would you call it a skyscraper? One of his taller buildings?
It's the only
commercial
hotel.
Building.
Yeah, it's one of the, yeah, it's the tallest hotel, and it's the only one really. A tall hotel that was originally maybe going to be designed in New York, but mm-hmm. it ended up being
in Oklahoma. All places in the world.
Bartlesville,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an amazing piece that transformed. It was originally kind of copper, but then over time it became green, and it's supposed to look similar to what a tree does in nature, and it's freaking amazing. I mean,
yeah.
it's the most amazing building in the whole town,
hands down. And it's still there. I mean, it's, you know, inside hasn't really been changed. Mm-hmm. A few things have been updated and whatnot, but you know, it's evolved a lot since it was built originally. I think it was like office space for Mr. Price, who was an
yep.
oil
tycoon. Yeah.
And yeah, anyways, but I think with Frank Lloyd Wright, one yeah. of the things I really do love is how much he does integrate, you know, human sculptures, buildings and whatnot with nature. That's really, he doesn't think that, you know, his philosophy about design and architecture was really more about that we should be blending in with nature. We should be really trying to embrace nature
yeah.
with it. So really interesting stuff. And he made a lot of different stuff. He was kind of a wild guy. He was different. He was kind of all over the place. He was a little bit of a control freak as well, you mm-hmm. know? And, but you know, to me, it's just something that I gravitate towards his designs, yeah, and a lot of the philosophy he has behind why he designed the things that he did. I thought it was very advanced for the time.
Yeah. Do you have a specific reason why you think, like, what is the main reason why you feel as though you're gravitated towards it? I mean, is it,
yeah,
like, what is it? Because I, in summary, in my opinion, I feel like I am most it's like a magnet to me when there's some form of something that makes that piece make me have to think really, really hard. And then from me thinking about it, I get a really solid glimpse into their own brain, mm, and how their brain works, and being able to understand maybe their personality. And then from that kind of understanding of how their head thinks, it makes me recognize how special they are, mm-hmm, as an artist. And yeah, then I'm like, okay, now I want to learn more and more and more and more and more. Yeah. That's how it works for me. So what would you say, it's similar to you? Would you say there's something else more than that?
I would say it's very similar. I would say once you start to really understand how his homes and buildings were designed from, like, his own desk,
mm-hmm,
and you see the lines. I mean, it's just real. I mean, it's the highest level of truly trying to get your vision,
mm-hmm,
into the real world.
Yeah,
you know, and it's thought through. You think he thought about the lighting, he thought about the lines, he thought about the fabric. I mean, everything from like A to Z was completely, mm-hmm, thought through.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of his buildings were kind of one off, right? Yeah. They aren't like these, like, you know, mass production homes that can be, you know, replicated in a whole neighborhood. I mean, it's like kind of like every single piece is a one off.
Yeah,
based on the location that it's in, mm-hmm, and based on the environment that it was in, and then also based on the personality of the people who he actually built it for.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's very unique. It's all very one of one. And I just think his he was very creative and just thought very differently.
Right.
And I think artists who see things differently and push the boundaries of their period in time and history,
yeah,
is something that I really tend to gravitate towards. And so Frank Lloyd Wright was certainly that in his era.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you were talking about, the desk to the reality thing. So this was something that we kind of learned when we were in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And we were at, it's one of the best collections of American art, including a Frank Lloyd Wright house that they, yeah, transported there from another part of the United States of America.
Yeah, I'll just say it's called Crystal Bridges, mm-hmm, and it was created by the daughter of Sam Walton,
mm-hmm,
of the Walmart family. And yeah, honestly, if you are into art, architecture, anything, especially if you want to see some of the best American pieces you've ever seen in your life,
yeah,
that is definitely a spot to go to.
Absolutely.
And they did get this house that Frank Lloyd Wright designed in New Jersey, and it was falling down from a mudslide, and, mm-hmm, it was about to just go kaput. And she said, no, I want that over here. So they actually deconstructed it,
yeah,
very carefully, and then rebuilt it right, mm-hmm, there in the Arboretum area, the walking nature
museum
outside of the museum. Yeah.
Yeah. And you do have to schedule a tour, because it is, yeah, it is a fairly small house, but it's really cool because it's not with a human. You actually get it's like an old, like, 90s cell phone, and you put it up to your ear, and as you enter different places, you just push a different number, so like 1 through 9. And the first thing that made me just see his art in a completely different way was they told you to look up and look down, and all these little squares, they were like the exact same thing that was on the desk. If you were to draw this out from a bird's eye view, they were just like 1 inch by 1 inch. And then he just made them, you know, 1 meter by 1 meter, 1 foot by 1 foot. And then he placed everything in that house exactly to be where it's supposed to be located at, all fitting within this perfect structure. And you were in it. And once I realized that, then the whole way that I looked throughout the whole entire house was completely transformed, because I was seeing his drawing in 3D format from the desk to the in-person experience of being right there and seeing how these shapes worked perfectly with this grid.
Yeah.
And it was a real big trip, but that's why I loved it. And that's what gravitated me towards it, was the fact that this was me entering his brain, and I actually felt like I got to know him in a mm-hmm. weird way, and his personality and his process, like everything about it. And it was just an amazing experience. And that's like one example of an artist that made me think really freaking hard.
Yeah, that's a really good example. That really was such a game changer for both of us with Frank Lloyd, right? We had already been big fans of him, but then once that connection was made in the tour, mm-hmm. I mean, then we actually, I think it was after that, only after that, we went to the hotel, and then yeah. we actually got to see some of the drafting tables he used,
yeah.
which, like, that's what the desk is called, is the drafting table, and you can see all the different squares and all the lines and exactly what he followed to actually design inside
yeah.
and outside. I think it's really, really difficult to come up with a design in the 2D form and then actually bring it to life in the 3D form.
For sure.
So, yeah, really impressive there too. But I mean, there's a lot of other artists that we're, you know, we're really, really fascinated by. And I think that your question of like what pulls us into them
mm-hmm.
is a really good one. And yeah. I think the other one that I would like to bring up is Jean-Michel Basquiat. Mm-hmm. I think I said that right. But yeah. you know what I'm talking about, Basquiat. And his drawings, I mean, I don't know. They fascinate me. They're a bit confusing. They're kind of abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like he's kind of trying to pour his brain out as quickly as possible. And obviously he had kind of a, you know, I wouldn't say disturbed mind, but he had a lot of stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
That some was dark, some was, it was a lot of stuff that he was just, you know, trying to grapple with in yeah. life. And, you know, some people see his stuff, and this is kind of part of it too. Some people see his stuff and it's like, that is like, looks like a child did that. That doesn't yeah. look like art.
Yeah.
And to me, there's intrigue there. There yeah. is something there, every single one. And I think that that intentionality of kind of almost intentionally making it controversial or intentionally making it so that some people won't get it, but those who do will connect really deeply with it.
Yeah.
I think that he was able to really do that. And obviously, you know, his short life kind of, I think, leaves us an imprint of his legacy too. Cause you know, once the artist passes, that's kind of, unfortunately, a lot of the time when like Pablo Picasso was not revered necessarily for his art when he was alive. It was only after
yeah.
he passed when everyone went crazy for his stuff. They just thought it was so different looking. So again, it's kind of, you know, people who are pushing the boundaries of, you know, what is art? Mm-hmm. Really, what mm-hmm. is this? I mean, art is just supposed to make you feel a type of way, right?
Right.
And so if it's making you feel something, that might not be exactly what the artist intended, but it's eliciting something
right.
within you. It's reflective of a time. It's reflective of a mindset. It's reflective of a lot of the different things. And then if someone can look at it and it makes them feel something,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there are, you know, work doesn't make you feel things, you know, like I yeah. think that with art, it's something, there's something intrinsic there that we sometimes you can't really explain it with words.
Yeah, it's hard to know? Explain with words, but I think this is a good challenge. And I kind of want to go back to the Basquiat. He's French, or no, sorry, he's mixed individual, African-American, Puerto Rican, and he what I love about it is he's got these like little secret like messages that when you really look harder at the image or understand his purpose for certain little clues and things within the piece itself, it kind of gives insight into his thoughts and his experiences.
Yeah.
And I loved one interview he did where he stated that he purposely crosses out words to bring attention to that word.
Mm.
So if it's crossed out, then people will actually look towards it and try to figure out what the word is that he crossed out.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really like smart way of, you know, guiding people through your pieces. And all of them have a deeper meaning. And a lot of them do have a lot of experiences of having race be a difficult part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love the balance of it, but it is wild and it is crazy and it's one of a kind and it is very expensive now. I mean, once an artist dies, the value of it goes up so much.
Yeah.
But he was such a character, and that's a really interesting piece. I honestly didn't know what piece you were going to discuss next, because in a weird way, piece of art that I actually wanted to talk about, which is so random and weird, is actually like some of the lyrics of some of the artists that I love the music of. Mm. Like when I was in college, I couldn't get enough Lil Wayne. I know it's kind of random that I'm saying this, but I have to say, I could listen to his mixtapes over and over and over again, because every time I would hear some of his lines, there were these little tiny like nodes that just didn't make sense. I would grasp like the bigger picture of it, but as I started paying attention to the details of it, I would start like really understanding his vision or like a deeper meaning within it. And it's just the metaphors and the ways that he described it, I was just like tripping out about it. And his format of kind of releasing that art was never written down. He would go up to the microphone and then say a few lines and then do a few more lines. And sometimes it was just straight from brain to mouth. And to hear it, it made me think so hard. And I'm all about thinking hard when it comes to art. That's my big thing for sure.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot there. Certainly when something is so creative that it makes you think, I feel like that takes a lot of, but it is hard. It is something that is rare.
Yeah.
And I love the example of Lil Wayne, because actually if you do listen to a lot of his like older mixtapes, when he is literally just freestyling, like mm-hmm. he has nothing written down. It is going from his head to the microphone and you're listening to that moment of creation. I think that to me is like, if I can understand that moment of geniusness, because I think that when something is truly making someone else think so deeply, mm-hmm. that's like a moment of human geniusness that is just captured and appreciated by other people.
Right.
And with, I think Basquiat, some of his pieces too, I think it was like, it's almost too much for some people though too, where mm-hmm. it's like, that's too deep, that's too much, but it's raw.
Yeah.
I think that raw moment of creativity and geniusness in an artist, it could take a whole lifetime to figure that out.
Yeah. But there are some pieces that I do not understand though, and I'm still trying to make sense of them, but I don't know if it's because I haven't like looked at them enough or whatever it is, but like, I don't understand Jackson Pollock's value of the art. I understand that his technique was very innovative at the time and he had a crazy story behind it, but I just don't understand how that could be one of the most expensive pieces of art that's ever been sold. You know what I'm talking about?
I agree. I think that similar to money, a piece of art is only worth what we agree it's worth. Yeah. Like if someone purchases something for $16 million, mm-hmm. why did mm-hmm. you do that? Why did you value it? I want to know all the things.
Right.
Is it just because you have a ton of money and now you're just trying to make the market yourself? Or did you already have a bunch and now you're really trying to make the market go crazy? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of different things, and it's a human experience, the whole trade of art and whatnot.
Right.
Like we talked about at the beginning, it's not a quantitative easy thing, like this is exactly how much a business is worth because of the sales and expenses, So it is, you have to be, I mean, when you're buying a piece of art, I mean, ideally, really, mm-hmm. it's something that you connect with, not just for the money.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering now that like we're kind of discussing like the which ones are perceived as being more valuable and which ones are not, how much of those that maybe we don't understand are really attaching themselves to the story of the artist themselves versus the art piece itself? Because Pollock does have an incredible story of struggle and, you know, these highs and lows of life and then this moment of genius. And then, you know, we all like a struggling artist story, you know, like everyone loves that. But how much of that is what is really attracting an individual to that piece?
Right.
Thoughts?
I think that humans connect with the story of other humans. Mm. They don't connect with a business. They connect with the story of the founder of the business, or they connect with the story of how it was built with a bunch of people. With art, it's not necessarily, I mean, there's nothing really cool and innovative about using acrylic paint these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have been doing that for a really long time, or oil-based paint, or whatever it is, whatever medium you're using.
Right.
But it's a story. I think that you hit it dead on. I think it is the story of the artist. I don't know if it's necessarily wanting the struggle of an artist, but there does seem to be some sort of like a connection of struggle and mental health and whatnot with, you know, being an artist, because you're basically sacrificing just to create.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, to me, I think no matter what, it's just it's just paint on canvas, right? Or whatever it is.
Well,
but you have to have some, there's something behind it.
Yeah.
It has to, a human to appreciate it has to infer some meaning.
Yeah, but is the meaning primarily from the artist's story, or is the meaning primarily from the piece itself?
I think it depends. I mean, if you're walking into a house that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, that's a bit different than just looking at a piece of art on a wall.
Yeah, well, I think, so in the Frank Lloyd Wright, I'd say that's the meaning is within the piece itself and like seeing his brain.
Yeah.
The Pollock one, I have a tough time categorizing it as it's the meaning of the piece itself versus the meaning of his story. Basquiat, he tells his story in the piece itself, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I feel like we absolutely have to bring in the $69 million piece that sold, the non-fungible token, which is using this technology where basically digital art can be transferred and there can't be replicas of the very first one, and it can be fully tracked, and therefore it is the one of one, but it still is a JPEG file, which is a crazy concept.
Yeah,
but $69 million worth. And I heard an interview of the individual who purchased it, who's choosing to be pseudonymous. Where he has another like digital name online profile, but he doesn't have his real name out there.
Right.
And he's out of Singapore, and he expressed why he bought that piece. And the piece is created by Beeple, who is known for making kind of these digital pieces of art. And the art piece, my beautiful wife was kind enough to look it up, and it's called
Every Day is the First 5,000 Days.
Every Day is the First 5,000 Days. And it is a piece that it's basically for 5,000 days, he dedicated himself to making one art piece, and he put it all together to make one kind of big mosaic, one after the other, which is kind of demonstrating his progress, and it's also demonstrating his dedication to becoming a true artist. And I really loved the new owner of it explaining why it's so meaningful to him specifically. And he says because it's this story of if you want to be the best at something, then you have to be working on it every single day. And the one thing in the world that currently can't be hacked is time. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that was the piece that he wanted to have, that he valued at almost $70 million because you can't hack time. And that was his collect. He was able to collect all those pieces as one big, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And now he's putting together like a virtual museum, which is a crazy concept in itself. But it is, when I hear that meaning behind it, it actually like strikes a note. And I really do want to like look at it really close and analyze every single one of those days to understand Beeple's journey of becoming, I think he's currently the second richest living artist, not richest living artist, but he made the most money as a living artist selling a piece while he's alive.
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah.
For $70 million. I mean, can you imagine? Like, that's crazy.
I know. Well, so what he sold was an NFT. This is a non-fungible token. And we have a whole episode on that. So if you haven't checked that out and you're like, what the heck is an NFT? Please listen to that. It's a basic overview of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, basically what this guy does, he has one of one. And actually Beeple has been one of the first artists on this NFT train way before anyone else was really on
for sure.
It. He was actually making digital art and offering it up to people for sale online, and
it's been for many years skyrocketing like crazy. Though I believe some of his pieces were sold just last year for $500.
Yeah,
and they would actually come with a physical item, so you could display it on like a digital screen, and you charge it using a USB-C, and they would come with all these little things to demonstrate that it's authentic, beautiful packaging. And now those pieces jumped from $500 to $70,000. I don't even think you can buy one for like $70,000.
I don't think
they're just skyrocketing in price now. And it's as soon as his most recent piece sold, And that was at through Christie's, right?
Yeah.
Christie's Auction House. As soon as that piece sold, all the other ones just jumped in price like so big.
Yeah.
And it's really demonstrating the value of this. I can't even call it a movement. I kind of feel like it's a bit of a recognizing that art, like what are these digital things that we kind of view as not being able to have possession of, but really you can have possession of a digital item.
Yeah.
And therefore the value of it can be what it would be worth if it was a physical item.
Yeah.
And it just opens up so many more opportunities and categories, because for his pieces are typically like moving with audio, and so much more is in the design of it. And prior to this, you couldn't display like a 3 minute clip or anything like that, or 30 second clip. But now those pieces, they're moving art pieces, they're digital, but there's ownership of it. And
yeah.
It's now worth this much. And now that can be a part of the conversation. It trips me out,
it's
obviously.
It's crazy. Well, I do think Beeple, okay, so like before this, Beeple was unknown in the art world. Like no one really knew
or
cared about him.
He's a graphic designer.
But what I love is, I really love, first of all, the guy who purchased, the big Beeple art piece through Christie's for almost $70 million. I think his reasoning is really, really brilliant and very cool too.
Definitely.
However, I think that the significance of the Beeple sale really comes down to, holy crap, the art world's about to get disrupted big time.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy just, and Christie's together. It's really, art has always been physical.
Right.
You could always copy and paste. You could download photos from Facebook.
Yeah.
You could do all that stuff. When you start really making the digital world, you know, like art that you can own and only own a certain
tangible.
It is.
Where there's like a certain amount. That's it. You
it's
know?
Actually more verifiable than physical items.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the digital world, it to me it's awesome, because with that great disruption comes a lot of really great new art.
Yeah.
A lot of really great new artists, musicians, graphic designers who never thought they could ever do anything that would be worthy of going into the Met.
Yeah.
You don't know. Beeples will go into the Met. Beeples
for sure.
Will go like to all the great museums.
Yeah.
And
it might be in a virtual museum, which is something that guy's curating right now. I mean, he bought 21 pieces of Beeple pieces. I think it was like way earlier this year. He paid $2.1 million for them, which was like outrageous at the time. But now that you're reflecting on like his one piece going for 69, you're like, that was actually not that bad of a deal, especially considering it came with the physical assets themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And the $69.3 million for this one JPEG, people are like, this is so crazy. No, just wait 10 years from now when that was the genesis. Like this was one of the first NFT artists. What other NFT artists are out there that are going to adapt to the technology, graphic designers who are nobodies right now, who are going to just make something really cool that people are drawn right into? And this really is an equal level playing ground. It doesn't really necessarily matter if you're some prestigious artist right now and you're like, well, the digital world is stupid, I'm not going to go there. Well, great. That opens up the space for new people to really get creative and make something that makes someone feel a type of way. And now all of a sudden,
Game on.
I mean, Beeple was a nobody a year ago.
Right.
To
me, one thing that you brought up that I'm interested in this term is, you said it's kind of a little bit of disruption, you know, like a little bit of creative destruction going on here.
Exactly.
But in all honesty, I actually view this a little bit more similar to it being a new awakening.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not going to harm any of the physical forms of art, you know, like we saw the Banksy piece that they burned and then they made into a digital token, and it ended up increasing in value because they made it digital instead of physical. But I'm starting to really wonder if this is going to become more of like just a new format, you know, like a whole new era of art being able to be created in a virtual world, you know, and it is absolutely wild. I'm very excited to see what's going on in it. I can confidently state that I've been studying it quite a lot.
It's really, really exciting, especially when you really start kind of, it is awakening. I think that's a perfect way to say it. It's an awakening of like how many of us have spent more time in the digital world than the real world
yeah.
for the last year?
Yeah.
Think about that. How many hours do you spend on your phone or your computer in a day rather than going outside and not looking at a screen?
Right.
You're already in the virtual world, people. Of course, there's going to be art for the virtual world.
Yeah.
What other worlds are going to be created in the future has yet to be seen. But I think if you really want to learn more about this, I highly recommend dig into how an NFT works, because all of the haters, all the people who are like, I don't understand this. You don't understand it. I get it. You don't understand the technology. And maybe it's uncomfortable. This change is going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people. But yeah. I think you're right. It's not going to make the physical world go away.
No.
It's just going to have everyone leaning in more into the digital world like they are right now.
It's an open gate now for a new world of artists.
Flood on in, people. It'll be fun.
Yeah,
it's going to be fun.
Thank you all for listening to our kind of like perspective on art. But I think it's a very relevant conversation to what's going on in the times.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to kind of see what comes out of this. I think artists are going to have more opportunities than they've ever had prior.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice that we just shared kind of what we like about art. If it's art that makes us think, congratulations. We're intrigued.
Exactly.
And we want to learn more. So do your best. Make something creative. Make something that makes you think. And we will talk to you tomorrow. If you have a moment, feel free to give us a review and subscribe.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
This journey through sound.